Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to what should have been issue 148 of the Bugle, but it's not. John, sadly, could not make today's recording due to having to go to Washington, D.C. to bang some heads together and get America moving in the right direction again. I think that's what he's up to these days. His influence grows wider and wider, or maybe he's interviewing someone, I can't remember. He was a bit vague, but I think he's probably sorting out America. Anyway, no Bugle this week. I'm in Mumbai, where tomorrow India plays Sri Lanka in the final of the Cricket World Cup, and the entire nation of 1.2 billion people will either go stark raving bonkers with excitement or stark raving numbed with inconsolable grief, depending on the result. On Wednesday, they play Pakistan in the semi-final, an event widely viewed around these parts as the most important thing in the history of the known universe. India won, which was lucky, because if they'd lost, I think they'd simply have detached the country off the bottom of Asia and rode it out towards Antarctica to be alone in their despair. We'll be back next week with a real Bugle, by which time John will have fixed America, and I'll be back in Blighty with a gleaming new set of tusks and more tiger skin rugs than you've had hot dinners. In the meantime, here is instalment two of the gig which firmly established me as the biggest selling English lapsed Jewish stand-up comedian come cricket writer in the history of Bangladeshi comedy. Andy Zaltzman, live in Dhaka. Part two.
So I think we do need to reassess our attitude towards the global economy. I think for too long, the whole of the global economy has been based on that ancient Chinese proverb that says, "If you give a man a fish, you will feed him for a day, but if you lease him a fishing rod, he will feed you cut-price fish for a lifetime." And don't forget, you can always threaten to take his fishing rod away, so there's a great incentive for him to fish and fish hard. Otherwise, no rod and then no income, and he won't be able to afford the imported processed fish that is all he and his family can now afford to eat. So I think somewhere along the line, things got a little bit skewed, and I think we need a fairer world. We have the fair trade movement around the world, and this is, again, it's a wonderful thing in theory, but in practice it's basically completely ridiculous, fair trade, because when you boil it down, fair trade is nothing more than basic manners. Is it giving people the right price for the products that you've taken from them? That's not fair trade, that is just basic decency. And it's kind of embarrassing for us in the wealthy nations of the world that we've reached the stage where fundamental human politeness has to be marked out with its own label. You know, when I meet someone, I don't introduce myself by saying, "Hello, I'm Andy, I have never killed anyone, where's my special sticker?" So I think rather than praising fair trade, what we really should be doing is demonising unfair trade, so that any product that isn't fairly traded should be legally forced to have a logo on it of an international businessman urinating on an African boy. Now, it wouldn't even have to be that explicit. It could just be a silhouette. You wouldn't necessarily have to see the man's wang, but I think it would nonetheless be a striking image, and one that would nag away deep at your subconscious as you queue up in a supermarket with a basket full of shattered lives. Now, and that punchline doesn't fit on the end of many jokes, or judging by your reaction, that one. So I think we need a fairer world, and because it's always the world's poor that seem to suffer the most whenever anything bad happens, whether it's environmental or economic. It's always the world's poor are already shaping up to have another bad millennium. I know we're only 11 years in, but it's so hard to come back from an early deficit in these things. It's and they've lost a lot of early wickets in cricketing terms, and that would make it 8 bad millenniums in a row for the world's poor, which is starting to look like a habit. So I think we clearly need to do more, but we've slightly forgotten about it in the West, because we've had our own economic problems, and we've forgotten about things like the world food crisis. It's affected everyone around the world in different ways. It's affected me. I'm having to pay a little bit more for my groceries in Britain. It's affecting other people in different ways. Some people, for example, are having to starve to death. It's a lifestyle shift for everyone, I guess, when you think of it like that. And it actually led to an amazing political blooper, I think. The G8, the leaders of the world's richest 8 nations, met to discuss the world food crisis, and they discussed it over an 18-course meal. Now, someone should have said, "Let's just get a takeaway." Surely. 18 courses of Michelin-starred disrespect. The political equivalent of a vicar at a funeral pointing at the coffin and shouting, "You're dead." astonishing rudeness. So I think, but we've kind of forgotten because we had the whole global economic crisis. Does anyone here understand economics, by the way?
No.
Good, because I don't, and you do. Are you an economist?
No.
You teach it. You're denying it. No. So, well, let me ask you. So, you're an economics teacher. What do you teach school students or university?
University.
So you should know what you're talking about. Now, can you explain what went on in the world economy? Just in 10 seconds. Well, I think that is pretty much what everyone else is thinking. But I don't understand economics, and I hope I die that way. I believe that to be the correct way to live one's life. But I have tried to understand what happened to the global economy, because it's, you know, it's baffling and fascinating in its own way. And I think I've tried to, you know, I think there's some important questions to be asked. Why was it that the whole of the global economy collapsed like a prim Victorian lady at the unexpected sight of a gentleman's danglers? And why did share prices go down faster than a buttered baby down a well-waxed water slide? Why? And if you're allergic to contrived similes, I suggest you leave the room now. But I think my answer to all these, and correct me if I'm wrong, my answer to all these questions about why global economics went so badly wrong is because the whole of the global economy is based on bullshit. It's based on fantasies and figments and people gambling on stuff that doesn't really exist. And essentially what happened is that capitalism got a bit overexcited in the aftermath of its points victory in the Cold War over communism, in which it was rather helped by the fact that communism spent the entire fight standing in the corner punching itself in the face. Do you like the Cold War boxing analogy? Excellent. And capitalism got overexcited, waltzed into a casino, and put the whole global economy on red, whilst muttering to itself, "Don't worry, everyone, I've got a system. I have got a system." And sadly, it didn't work. And I think we have to ask questions, and we have to learn lessons from all the things that went wrong. We've learned the dangers of too much debt. We learned this in the American mortgage sector. It taught the world a very important lesson about debt. And that lesson, there's a lesson that maybe we couldn't have learned. That lesson is, if you do lend a lot of money to people who have absolutely no way of paying that money back, then conceivably they might not pay that money back. Now this is the kind of thing we can only learn by trial and error, isn't it? There's no other way. I would say it's very much like slamming your testicles in a car door, you know. Until you actually do it, you don't know for sure whether or not it will hurt. And you cannot build an economy on hypothetically painful testicles, as J.K. Galbraith himself once said. Now, also I think we've learnt the dangers of a lack of regulation of the global financial markets. And there simply are not enough jokes that start with that as a setup line. And if I have my way, by this time next year, all jokes will start with that as a setup line. Hey, there's a danger in unregulated financial markets. That's what dogs think, but cats, they think deregulation is the way to go. What's up with that? Anyway, Adam Smith, the famous 18th century Scottish economist, and please pay attention because I have read nearly all of Adam Smith's entry on Wikipedia. He wrote about the invisible hand that's supposed to guide the financial markets, make sure they don't go too far wrong, just nudging things in the right direction, kind of benevolent force, just making sure nothing goes too badly wrong. And this is all very well in theory, but there is a problem with this. And I think we all have to ask ourselves a question, and do try to be honest with yourself as you answer it. If you had an invisible hand, what would you do with it? See,
This is the flaw in the system we've been relying on. Human nature. You know, we'd nick things, we'd flick invisible V signs at people we don't like, and we would grope stuff. And that is exactly what the financial markets have been doing. So, and it's very important. And it's odd at the centre of all this. There's America. America, the world's a fascinating, baffling nation, America. The world's greatest capitalist economy, and also one of the world's most committed Christian nations. And to me, that unbridled capitalism and Christianity seems an uneasy blend of hobbies. A bit like being a vegan assassin. or a nun running an illegal donkey fighting ring. It just doesn't seem right. So I think we have to reassess. We have to reassess our priorities, because the bailouts of the various failing banks and economies around the world have cost trillions of dollars. Trillions of dollars on these bailouts. The world's top oil companies make billions and billions of dollars profit a year. And UNICEF say that an extra $5 billion of aid every year could save the lives of 6 million children. Now, that works out at, I think, around about $800 per child. And I know, to us in the West, that's quite a lot, because you can get a really good quality, high-definition television for that money. And, you know, modern televisions come with so many more functions than the starving third-world child. So that's what we, as consumers, are looking for. But $5 billion of aid could save the lives of 6 million children. America is currently still planning to put a man on Mars within about 25 years at an estimated cost of $500 billion. So I do hope that first man on Mars, when he steps out onto the red planet and speaks to the watching world, I do hope that his first words are, "One small step for man, 600 million dead children for mankind." Is this on, Houston? Is this on? So, sorry, they'll only be filming it in Texas. So, it's all right. So, we have to learn from the mistakes, and we have to accept, certainly, you know, our economies in Britain and America. We benefited from the boom times. We all knew that the bubble would burst. We were just hoping it wouldn't burst until after we were dead. But sadly, it has burst, and now I guess we have to accept some responsibility. We've enjoyed these good times, and we allowed these things to build up. And as my grandmother used to say to me, very wise woman, my grandmother used to say to me, "Andy, do not complain about being eaten by a horse if you've chosen to play polo dressed as a sugar lump." Very sage lesson. And I think also all these mistakes have been made before, and I think we have to ask ourselves, when we look at the state of the world and all its inequalities, you know, how often must the same mistakes be made before people cease passing them off as coincidence? And to me, the answer to that question is 50 times, personally, because 49 times I've now electrocuted myself. If it happens again, I will stop dropping my toaster in the bath to see if I can make crunchy water. So, we all have to live and learn. So it's interesting seeing another a whole new part of the world that I've never seen before. It's been a really kind of eye-opening, educational experience, and it's been great just watching lots of cricket as well. And particularly, are you all cricket fans?
Yes. Yeah,
good. It was very sad for Bangladesh. I was here at the start of the tournament, and their kind of sense of national pride was really inspiring. Something I've never really seen back home, where people seemed really genuinely proud that the World Cup was coming here, and even at that stage, hopeful that the team might do well. Certainly, might not be bowled out for 58 and 78 in two crucial games. And it was kind of sad that happened, and that some of that optimism has gone. And also, we had the stones being thrown at the West Indies bus, and I thought that was misinterpreted. And in fact, the Bangladesh Cricket Board have cleared it up, and they've said it was in fact merely overenthusiastic geologists who were so impressed with the West Indian performance that they wanted to get their favourite rocks signed by the players. You know, just a bit of autograph hunting gone wrong. That's all it was. So, and it's been kind of weird following England, this bizarre side that England are, that they're kind of full of quite boring, prosaic cricketers, and they've had these wildly exciting games. And I think England is sort of a bit, probably meeting a guy who dresses like an accountant and talks like an accountant and sleeps in pyjamas made of tax returns. But then you find out that he is in fact the lead singer of a thrash metal band and brushes his teeth in snake blood. It's got a bit... Okay. Maybe that analogy needs a little bit of fine-tuning. But, it's been fascinating. Very interesting World Cup, despite the fact that you probably could have picked the last eight teams, certainly at the start of the tournament, and even more so, you could have picked them 30 years ago. As long as you'd read the wind in South African politics, I guess. But we're going to see Pakistan tomorrow, and. They have my favourite player of the World Cup so far, who's Kamran Akmal, who's an inspiration to us all. It's amazing seeing elite-level sport. All these primed athletes, you know, the very most talented people in their countries, honed and professional. And you see Kamran Akmal, and you think, I could do that. He keeps wicket as if he's just borrowed someone else's limbs. And then I'll come to the South Africa-New Zealand game on Friday, and the thing I most hope for there is that Graham Smith is out first ball. Because, I don't know if any of you feel the same way about Graham Smith, but I cannot stand him. I fully admit he's an outstanding player, he's probably a very nice man, but he is the ugliest batsman in the history of cricket. He had a partnership with... Hashim Amla the other day, who's a very stylish player, and watching it was sort of like seeing a champion pianist trying to play a Chopin melody while someone was hacking a horse to pieces with a chainsaw next to him. And in fact, classical scholars have announced that they are reassessing whether the famous Theban king Oedipus skewered his own eyes out due to his guilt about killing his father and marrying his mother, or because he'd just seen Graham Smith play a cover drive. Yes, we'll find out. So, and let me tell you, those routines will not work back in London. So,